Wayne Shorter on tenor sax with Footprints. This is from his 1967 album, Adam's Apple. Shorter is on tenor sax, as I've said. Herbie Hancock is on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, and Joe Chambers on drums. This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead. And a couple of things to pick up the pace on, even as we kind of hovering news-wise. But some motion has been made in Minnesota, where a judge has directed the High Court of Minnesota has directed a judge to the judge hearing this case to add another charge to make sure that another charge is added, and that is the third degree murder charge. It was in the list of charges before, but then it got knocked out and now it's back in. So now that would start another set of delays, because it has to be recorded and people will have to be prepared, especially the defense will have to prepare to defend the client, and that is ex-cop or ex-officer. What is his name? I can never remember his name off the top of my head. Coven, to come up with a credible defense for this newly re-added charge. The case is going through all kinds of permutations, but it is not hopeless. It's not one that should cause utter and complete frustration. It is just what happens in cases where each side wants to make sure that they've done and or are doing their very best to fulfill their obligations as they see them in a case. So even though the public might be a bit frustrated and can't make sense of what is happening, it is not so outlandish as to cause people to, you know, lose their hair. It's just the way the system works and sometimes doesn't. But this is the latest with the Chauvin case, where the police officer, the ex-officer, I should say, who is the principal defendant in this case. There are three other cops. They will be tried separately and together in August. At least that's the timeline for their trial. But for now, the one lead cop, and that's Derek Chauvin, is on trial. They have some more things to work out with the addition or re-addition of this third-degree murder charge. And we'll see when they actually do start this case. While I'm on that, if you can call in quickly enough, at 888-874-4888. What does this suggest to you? That the on-again, off-again nature of this third-degree charge, which now is back on the table, what does that suggest to you? What does that make you think? Do you have a quick answer? I'll take it. At 888-874-4888. Like I said, this is something that when you come up against a case like this, you can't be shy. You want to put yourself to the test and see whether you're on the right track. And whether how does your thinking fit into, let's say, maybe the defense's thinking or the prosecution's thinking. So you use the opportunity to test yourself. You may be dead wrong. I have been many times. But you also may be right on the case, which means you're getting better and better at observing cases coming before the court in which you have a vested interest. So if you have an idea of the significance of the re-addition of this charge, let me know. 888-874-4888. You got to be fast. You got to be on the ball around here. We don't fool around. Even though you don't know, but you got to be fast. I understand the hesitancy, but don't be afraid. Don't hesitate. Put your own self to the test, because we're all learning. I hope you haven't forgotten that we're in learning mode. So everything that you're thinking is perfectly allowable, and we can flesh it out. Okay, so today also marks the 1 year anniversary, or the first anniversary, of the declaration of the coronavirus pandemic in the United States and through much of the world. A couple of figures that are very, very jarring. So far, there have been 29,862,124 diagnosed cases. There have been 20,640,270 people who are listed as having recovered. There have been 542,191 deaths recorded in the United States, and there are more than 8 million, in fact, to be precise, 8,679,633 active cases. So despite the fact that we're 1 year into this pandemic, we still are dealing with rather gruesome statistics. And the evidence shows that people are fighting mad. You know, they're fighting very, very hard to make this thing go away. But we are not in charge of when it decides to go away. We are in charge only of trying to fend it off with sensible practices. And even that does not guarantee us that we won't catch the virus. But still, we have to plot on, but smartly. Ed from Queens, what do you have to say?
Hey, good afternoon, Patrice. How are you doing?
Okay. Responding to that third degree murder charge?
Oh, they're looking for a way out. They want to give themselves an option as far as prosecution, to sort of like downgrade it but appease the public at the same time. I really believe that's an option, because they're not committing. They're not committing to the fact that this man murdered this man. And they're not putting themselves, they're putting themselves in a position to give themselves a logistical cover your butt, so to speak. So they don't wind up with a hung jury or a mistrial. They're trying to give the jury, they're trying to give themselves a way out. They're trying to give the jury a way out so they can present a picture to the public. Say, we tried, but this is what we came up with.
That is an excellent analysis. You're right on the money. They have decided that they don't want to take any chances with just two options here. But adding the third option gives them hope. There's hope now that they the case could end in a conviction, even though it might not be the conviction that people are hoping for. But there will be a conviction just the same. That's now built into the trial as a kind of safeguard. You're right on the money. You're absolutely correct about it. Thank you so much. You solved the big mystery right up front. So we have something to work with when we get to the subject. But go ahead.
It's just sad that it's just sad that it's a cop out and that it is so obvious.
Yes.
Because I'm no lawyer, but I've seen this happen 100 times. I've seen it happen with Sean Bell. I remember that was one of the first cases that I was really involved in because I lived in that part of Queens. And another point that you brought up, which I don't know why they ain't bringing up, because it was brought up during the Sean Bell case also, these officers were on or undercover in a club, and they were coming out of the club, and their gunshots were fired, and the 41 shots. It was addressed by, I believe, Benjamin Crump, but I don't know why they never followed through with it. Were these officers drinking on the job during their undercover operation where they're giving breathalyzers because of the way the shots were distributed and fired in that part of Queens? Were these officers under the influence of something? You know, anytime you work for the city, I've worked for private corporations, anytime there's an accident with some type of machinery or some type of procedure, you're given a drug test. You're given a breathalyzer. That's par for the course. To make sure that you weren't under the influence and to cover their behinds for insurance reasons. But this is never done with the police. Or if it is mentioned, it's pushed to the side. But I just wanted to make that comment about what you said yesterday. I totally agree with you. These men should be chemically tested to see what type of condition they were in.
Well, I've held to that for quite some time, that this one-sided business of testing the victim of a pretty heinous crime is one thing, but no matter what you do, you can't avoid the truth of this matter, and that is everybody agrees that George Floyd did not die of a drug overdose.
No.
Okay.
No, of course not. That's just to blame the victim.
That's right.
Condition he was in. Blame the
drugs were not the cause of George Floyd's death.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with his interaction, and I'm using a very subtle word here, with four cops, none of whom were tested. At least on the record, we don't see that a test was administered to the officers or that they were ordered to take a test immediately after this situation went down. But there's no record of them having been administered a drug test or any other kind of test to determine what was in their system. It was all about testing Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an old trick. We're sick of it, and it ought to stop.
Yeah.
Thanks for getting us started today, Ed. Thank you for being on the money, that's for sure. Thank you. I want to talk a bit. I want to go back to this so-called interview, as it is being called, Oprah Winfrey's interview with the Sussexes. That's Prince Harry and his wife, Meghan Markle, and all the fallout that has occurred and still more fallout to come and whatnot. Here's a question to you. I want to see whether you can spot what the glaring hole in all of this is. Did you spot it? Have you spotted it? Do you have a clue? It was the story of the moment. It still is. I mean, news story after news story is predicated on that story, and it becomes itself a big story. It hasn't let up. So this must be a big story. But what are you missing? What are we all missing here? I contended, if you recall, I said this was a very interesting moment. And interesting from the point of view of where Oprah Winfrey is likely to go next. Certainly not as an employee, but as a behemoth in an industry. She very astutely used this interview to touch certain lightning rods that would in turn touch off a lot of discussion and debate. And, you know, nothing is going to be calm after this so-called interview. Very skillfully, she skillfully moved, made a big move. I don't know if people saw it, but I called attention to it. She made a huge move utilizing this interview. Did you spot it? Did you spot it at all? And it is now the beginning of that phase. What am I talking about? People say, why don't you come out and say it? No. You see, when you are looking at the news, you shut down all of the other senses that you have. And that's so bad to do. You're supposed to be alert on all these different levels. And then you find out after, you know, practice, that all is not as it seems. There are other things happening. Other things are in motion. They're not spelled out. They're not delineated. They're not identified. But you can see. You can see that this interview will serve as a launching pad for some other things that are about to happen. But even so, let's take a look at the role of Oprah Winfrey here. Not to beat her up or to be critical, just to analyze it. She did a phenomenal job, because she has everybody talking about the wrong thing. Everybody's talking about the wrong thing. And they missed so far. I mean, I've been keeping track of where the conversation is going, and nobody has landed even close to the territory. There is something major happening, and something even bigger about to happen, and the world missed it. What was that? Now, that's my theory, okay, by the way. I'm not saying that this is the fact. I'm saying this is my theory, because I noticed it. And I heard the questions, how they were phrased, how they were posed, and I heard the responses. I'm giving you a hint. I just gave you a big fat hint. Let's see if you're picking up on it. You know, I have to keep you sharp. Because Lord knows I am losing it. I gotta have somebody around me who is sharp, okay? Because a time will come when I would have lost my edge completely. So I'm hoping that you could bail me out here. Jean from Maryland, what do you think was missed about this interview?
Hi, Utrice.
Hi.
I think there's a ton of things that were missed on the interview. The first, and what was really glaring for me, is that this family has 500 years of stolen wealth that has been used to plunder the world and is on display now. And that the Queen, who, generally speaking, does not lower herself to address these issues, has been forced to come out and say something publicly. And I think that that's being done because they are trying desperately to hide Prince Andrew.
Why him?
Prince Andrew had a very strange relationship and association with Ghislaine Maxwell, the person who was procuring underage girls for Jeffrey Epstein. And
correct.
Prince Andrew is one of a number of people who visited frequently Jeffrey Epstein on his island in the Bahamas. And there are accusations by women who were underage girls at the time who were raped by Prince Andrew. And for that kind of information to be out there for public consumption is beyond reproach for the Queen. And they need these distractions because Ghislaine Maxwell is about to go on trial. And when she goes on trial, there will be discovery. And Prince Andrew and the family will be put out on public display. And I'm waiting for that.
Well, you started off strong, that's for sure. But you still are not yet in the bullseye.
Okay, I'll listen for someone else.
No, you did a very good job. And everything you said is relevant. Very much so. But what is it that we're missing? Including, and perhaps especially, Oprah Winfrey.
Well, you have to remember who Oprah
is. This whole interview thing.
Oprah is a media darling, a media personality. And the money that swirls around in those media circles is a very small circle. And Oprah is one of those people who, with the ease of a phone call, can garner TV time, the attention of the broad media, for whatever it is that she wants to talk about, and people tune in and advertising time is sold. Oprah has that power.
Correct.
Now, I do take your point. It's probably not as simple as the money that's associated with advertising sales, but I have a feeling it has something more to do with the family of the Queen and them being able to save face.
Okay. Good points, strong points. You get
okay,
credit.
Thank you.
Lots of credit.
Thank you.
Okay. But we still looking for the answer. Somebody's got to have the answer. I can't believe that, okay, a couple of days have passed and we still don't have the answer. Tony, from Orlando. You're on the air.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I watched the interview on 60 Minutes? And, or was it, that was a special show that Oprah had, right?
Yes.
I believe it was. And all I saw in that interview were two things. I came to two conclusions. Rich people having each other's back and enriching each other, which is what I saw, because now that Harry and Meghan are in the United States and been cut off, supposedly, from the royal family, they got to make money to support their expensive lifestyle. So I just see them, you know, rich people hooking each other up. And that's what rich people do. Rich people enrich their buddies and their friends, and they keep those circles going. And the second conclusion I saw was that I really don't feel sorry for them, and I don't feel sorry for the royal family. I just see that they're a perfect match for each other because they're both bunch of they're all a bunch of sneaky people, and I really don't feel pity or you know sadness for Meghan. You know, she did her family dirty. She pretty much dissed her whole family, I believe, except for her mom. You know, besides that, she pretty much just said the heck with everybody. And I don't feel sorry for her for that, just because of that.
All right. Okay. But that was my question, though. But you're correct. You're on the track. But we got to get on this track and keep moving along track.
I mean, like I said, I think a lot of it has to do with money. Because, like I said, now that they're here, even in the interview, they exposed that they stayed at Tyler Perry's home in a mansion. I mean, who gets to stay at Tyler Perry's home for 3 months? Unless you're another rich person, you know? So, you know, it's just a bunch of people making deals. I believe they got all these contracts from Netflix, Spotify, and all this stuff, and it's a money making campaign. Oprah Winfrey, I think she spun out her own streaming service or whatnot, but she's expanding in the media. So this is all about ratings, about money, and all to do about nothing, because at the end of the day, there was nothing really revealed in the interview.
Okay.
But a bunch of rumors.
We're getting closer. We're getting very much closer. That's good. Good offering there. Good offering. Thank you. Asher from New Jersey, let's see if you get us even closer to the answer.
I think I do. If I may say so myself. I think what Oprah is trying to do is trying to reinvent herself as an investigative reporter. Because she pretty much died off as a media darling. I mean, she doesn't have her show anymore. She has her station, but she doesn't really have anything going herself. And
so if you suspect this, as you looked at this program, how do you rate her performance?
Well, that's a good question. That's a
you're exhausted already?
She kind of goes to what is I don't know how to express it. We're in there's a lot of racial tension.
Yes.
And I think that is going to be, that might be her niche, to just bring out, go and to delve into the racial tension and bring it out. I don't know. That's all I got.
Well, you made a noble effort, a noble try, I got to say.
In the
process, you made some very important points. You actually landed on a track here, but that track has to be followed a lot further to get the big answer. We are conditioned, all of us, we are conditioned to believe that what we see is what is, that there can't be anything beyond what we see.
Okay.
And so we stop thinking, what could this be that we are seeing? What is happening before our eyes? We don't ask that question. I'm going to go back to your response of Oprah Winfrey being the big investigative reporter. Let me ask you.
Okay.
If you recall any question at all that she asked that fit that category.
Well, I'm not sure if she asked the question or the information was just volunteered, but it seemed that.
Okay, all right, we cooking with gas now.
What did I win?
No, that's a very astute observation. If she was acting in the manner of an investigative reporter or serious reporter, whether you're investigative or whatever, but okay. It should have occurred to people, they're not hearing tough questions. They're not hearing tough questions. What they're hearing are questions laid at the feet of Harry and Meghan for them to answer. So she transferred responsibility totally to them, which means she exempted herself. She snuck out of the room while nobody was looking, and people still figured that she was there. No. What she did was hand them the responsibility and the consequence or possible consequence for their answers to the so-called questions that she raised. But those were not the kinds of questions that you would expect of a serious journalist, a person who is looking to go beyond what is said. And you ask pointed questions that make everybody, uncomfortable and that demand answers. She was not asking those kinds of questions.
She kind of did. It seemed to me that at the very beginning, she started and then she, I don't know if I will call this a strategy, but she seemed to be very, her questions seemed to be kind of pointed at the beginning and then she eased off, but it put them in a mode where they were just opening to answer questions, and she just stood back asking, like, so?
Yeah. Yes. So that's what I mean. She was very skillful in the way she did that,
which means that
she absolved herself from the responsibility of carrying this heavy journalistic load. She didn't take responsibility for that. She let them carry that load and still positioned herself as if She was the one asking the tough questions, but there were no tough questions.
Let me be the one to now say that's an astute observation.
All right, thank you, sir. So if that is what she did, why would she do that? When, I mean, she could get so many plaudits, she could get so much praise for being the intrepid reporter looking for an answer no matter what. She is going to get it, and she's going to get it by asking very tough and pointed questions. The fact that she knows Harry, she knows Meghan.
Yeah, she was at the wedding.
Personal, right, but you're doing a job. This is your job now. Why would you hand it to them with all that you know? You know they're suffering. You know they have been made to live a life they never expected living at that level of in the royal family and so forth. Why did Oprah Winfrey just, you know, pepper them with questions? But the questions were really the re-asking of their statements. They made statements, and the questions were made, were asked to have them make additional statements, which Oprah will then use to follow through as if she's originating the question, but she's not. She's not originating the question, but she has them there, and they can't get up and run. They have to formulate some kind of response. And truth be told, their guard was completely down.
Yes, yes.
They believed Oprah was a friend. They were talking to a trusted friend. Oprah had other ideas.
And the 60 million people who eavesdropped, right?
That's right. That's right. So what could be behind all of this intrigue? Why would Oprah Winfrey, in the very moment that she could just shine as, I mean, the quintessential journalist, she's been handed one of the biggest stories. She's been handed the key participants in that story. And she backs away and leaves them to kind of frame everything, take responsibility, editorial responsibility. And, you know, she peppers it with a little question here and a little question there. But when you listen to the questions that Oprah Winfrey asks, none of them put her at risk. Nobody could accuse her of being one of those penetrating journalists who, right, for the moment that she's engaged with these two principals here, suspends all the other stuff of, okay, we know each other and whatnot. I want the story. And the story would not come from questions that are follow-up questions to statements that you are making. It was very skillfully done.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, so we agree. Thank you for asking me pointed questions. I appreciate it. And thanks for sharing a laugh, too.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. We still have a couple of minutes, but we still haven't gotten close to the devastating story that should have been told. What is that story? And it still needs to be told. What is it? Don't tell me you missed it. It was all over you. You're watching it, and you're talking to people about it, and people are watching and talking among themselves about it. It's one of the biggest stories of our time. So what is it that was missed? 888-874-4888. Or you're going to end up kicking yourself. Of course I saw that, you'd say to yourself. Harry from Forest Hills, is that what you will say to yourself? I'm not hearing you, Harry.
Oh, okay. Here's what I want to point out. I spoke to you about 3 weeks ago. I called up as an historian, but I don't know if this was brought up. I didn't see the interview, but Prince Harry, his father is not Prince Charles. His father is a military...
That has been bandied around because he has red hair.
That's right, but at that point, Prince Charles and Princess Diana were on the way to ending the marriage, and she had an affair, and I've seen pictures of the man. He was a military man, and she had an affair, and Prince Harry is the result. I don't know how many people know this, but also
How do you prove what you just said? What is the proof?
At the time that Prince Harry was born, Prince Charles, the man that she was married to, they were not living together. And I've seen stories about this many times that the Princess Diana husband was not the father. Also, the monarchy has been under tremendous attack for years and years from the public because they feel that too much taxpayer money is being expended on the monarchy. And
you're way off track here. You're way off track. It's not irrelevant in and of itself what you're saying, but I want you to get very close to the question I raised, as close as you can. And you had 2 strikes already. I'll give you one more.
Look, we know that the monarchy of England has been involved in all kinds of sordid situations going all the way back 400 or 500 years ago. And they like to keep these things as quiet as they can because they want to maintain their power, just like any other entity wants to retain power. And so they suppress. But I feel... I don't know what the percentage of the public realizes that Prince Harry is not the son of Prince Charles.
I would be very careful about repeating that as fact, if I were you. You have to have incontrovertible proof to say something like that. And I doubt you do.
Look, I haven't been able to take a biological test of for Prince Harry but something was radically wrong that caused Prince Harry to give up all his royal privileges and not only give them up but leave Great Britain to go to Canada. Because most people don't give up power. And,
yeah, but you're supposing, and you are coming up with theories. This is not the time for theories. This is a time for facts. You either have them or you don't.
I have no access to blood work. I wish on Prince Harry to know his actual lineages. But all the things that I have read, and I've read quite a number of them, all say this was not Prince Charles's son.
Right, but they all said the same thing, committing the same error. None of them has had definitive proof of anything.
The only way that can ever happen is the case goes to court.
Well, you see, but you just agreed, and then you dismissed it as if I never said that. And if,
no, as I basically think that it's fact, but it's not going to be admitted by the royal family.
Right. So you can't say it's fact, but
right,
not at this level. That is not acceptable. You either have the facts or you don't.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. Sharon Long Branch, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm stay on for just a second. I wanted to make a comment, if I may, about what this last caller before me said about Prince Harry's parentage. I didn't see the interview with Oprah and Prince Harry and Princess Meghan. I'm been trying to find out exactly what happened. I hear little snippets of there was a lot of controversy, but I never knew exactly what happened. I hope one day I can find out. But, and I'm going to hang up real quick because I know you got other callers that want to answer your question. I can't. But anyway, about Prince Harry, Diana commented on that. Not too long after she heard the rumors that people were saying this man that she was dating was a Captain James Hewitt, a red-haired man. They were saying they thought he might be Harry's father. And she was outraged. She said when she started, when she'd had Prince Harry, hadn't even met this man yet. And she said she had many people in her family that had red hair. There was nothing unusual about red hair in her family. And if you see pictures of Harry when he was little next to this James Hewitt, he doesn't look like him. He looks more like people in Diana's family. So I just wanted to say that real quick. Diana actually denied that publicly, that either she said she didn't even know him when she had Harry. I wish I could answer your question about the interview, but I didn't
All right.
see it. Hopefully,
well,
I can catch it.
Just to say for calling in. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good day.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. This is at the center of what was not said. And this was, in my view, the ongoing saga of intentional ignorance about the royals of Britain, about Britain itself. You see, the whole thing is kind of made up. There's a story about it. There's reality, and then there is the cosmetic stuff, that the cosmetic treatment that it gets. And I guess I am more in tune with it as a former, quote, subject, unquote, of Britain. And anybody who comes out of that experience and still doesn't get it really deserves, you know, 20 lashes with wet spaghetti in public. You see, the thing is this. Oprah Winfrey, in the course of this interaction she's having, should have provided a very interesting background about Britain itself and the contradictions of Britain. And this is one of them. This isn't the only one. There was a contradiction that Britain experienced with Diana, a contradiction even with Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth. Lots of contradictions. But it never gets told. It never gets mentioned. Britain, for all time, is to be the quintessential just society. Despite all we know, despite all the books that have been written about it, the wars, the castle intrigue, the mysterious murders, But most importantly, in the modern day, Britain still has not accounted for a lot of contradictions, yawning contradictions in our faces, and they still wouldn't discuss it. And here we have a journalist supposedly after the truth. Well, I have to concede that what she's, the truth she is after deals with, you know, the way she defines it, the racial question about the complexion of the Sussexes' son and future child, the daughter who is to come in the spring, and things like that to titillate the public, when in fact it could have been an introduction to the hypocrisies of Britain. And it should have introduced, at least introduced the idea, although that was not the purpose of the so-called interview. But to go for the entire interview and not even hint that Britain has a long and sordid history of lying, covering up the truth, covering up the facts, getting rid of people who are inconvenient to the realities that should be explained. That too is important to discuss, very important to discuss, because it helps put perspective. It is not about perfect Britain, the perfect queen and the perfect royalty, as opposed to the people assailing it and attacking it. But the contradictions do exist. And they have existed for centuries. Who was it who raised the question? I believe it was Asher and Tony, both raised a question about the sordid relationships between the royal members of the royal house with the likes of Jeffrey Epstein. That's in modern times. So to take the opportunity to whitewash everything and to pretend that these things don't exist, or if they exist, they have no bearing on the instant matter that you're talking about, is itself to be dishonest, to avoid telling a very necessary truth. And Oprah should really be concerned that she's willing to cut corners to get, just like anybody else, just like anybody willing to negotiate their way into stardom. What are they willing to give up? Is it integrity? Is it the truth? Is it the real story? What is the trade-off here? At some point, we will all know who traded what for what. But we cannot ignore the fact that there was a trade, a trade-off. We have yet to find out what it is. But we will. We will find out. And we don't have to go too far. You could just look at the interview, and it will give you several guides as to where the trade-offs can be spotted. You can see it right there. They're right there to be seen. But this is to encourage us all to look at things like this with a certain degree of a healthy disregard, a healthy cynicism, because there is always a plan, there's always a purpose. We don't know, and it's not readily seen and disclosed what that purpose is. But make no mistake, there is one. I talked about certain aspects of what I think is about Oprah's next move. And within the blink of an eye, she has already seen her way halfway there. This is big. And we are so naive, we still think it's about an interview. It's not about an interview at all. But we will get to learn that, because things will be unfolding as we go along. And we note it, and we remind ourselves we saw it, but we didn't want to see it. Thanks so much for contributing today, and for doing so with such courage and a great sense of humor. That helps a lot. Thank you so much. Let's get together tomorrow and talk some more. Bye-bye.